So, today we'll be speaking from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, first chapter, and text 18. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Gaur Bhutvashru Mukhi Kena Krandanti Karunam Vibho Upasthitanti Ketasmai Vyasanam Samavochata Gaur Bhutvashru Mukhi Kena Krandanti Karunam Vibho Upasthitanti Ketasmai Vyasanam Samavochatam Gaur Bhutvashru Mukhi Kena Krandanti Karunam Vibho Upasthitanti Ketasmai Vyasanam Samavochata. Prabhus. Gaurputvashru Mukhi Kina Krandanti Karunam Vibho Upasthitanti Ketasmai Vyasanam Samavochata. Gaur Bhutvashru Mukhi Kena Karandanti Karanam Vibho Upasthitanti Ketasmai Vyasanam Samavochata. Gaur Bhutvashru Mukhi Kena Randanti Karunam Vibho Upasthitanti Ketasmai Gaur Bhutvashru Mukhi Kena Randanti Karunam Vibho Upasthitanti Ketasmai Vyasanam Samavochata Gaur Bhutvashru Mukhi Kena Krandanti Karunam Vibho Upasthitanti Ketasmai Vyasanam Samavochata Gaur Bhutvashru Mukhi Kena Krandanti Karunam Vibho Upasthitanti Ketasmai Vyasanam Samavochata. Matajis. Gaur Bhutvashru Mukhi Kena Krandanti Karunam Vibho Upasthitanti Ketasmai Vyasanam Samavochata. Okay, the word meanings. Please repeat after me. Go, the shape of a cow. Bhutva, assuming. Ashrumukhi, with tears in the eyes. Kena, very much distressed. Krandanti, weeping. Karunam, piteously. Vibho, of Lord Brahma. Upasthita, appeared. Antike, in front. Tasmai unto him, Lord Brahma, Vyasanam, her distress, Samavochata, submitted. Mother Earth assumed the form of a cow. Very much distressed, with tears in her eyes, she appeared before Lord Brahma and told him about her misfortune. Please repeat after me. Mother Earth assumed the form of a cow. Very much distressed, with tears in her eyes, she appeared before Lord Brahma and told him about her misfortune. Okay, so we're just going to move ahead to text 19 because there's a purport for text 19. Brahma tad upadharyata sahadevaisthaya saha jagama satri nayana stiram kshirapayo nidhe. Translation. Thereafter, having heard of the distress of Mother Earth, Lord Brahma with Mother Earth, Lord Shiva, and all the other demigods approached the shore of the ocean of milk. It's okay. Thank you. Purport. After Lord Brahma understood the precarious condition of the earth, he visited the demigods headed by Lord Indra, who are in charge of the various affairs of this universe, and Lord Shiva, who is responsible for annihilation. Both maintenance and annihilation go on perpetually, under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 4:8, Paritranaya Sadunam Vinashaya Chaduskritam, those who are obedient to the laws of God are protected by different servants and demigods, whereas those who are undesirable are vanquished by Lord Shiva. Lord Brahma first met all the demigods, including Lord Shiva. Then, along with Mother Earth, they went to the shore of the ocean of milk, where Lord Vishnu lies on a white island, Shvetadvip. Om Agyanthimirandhasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshudunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutade Svayam Rupam Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shiguro Shiyuta Patakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Saganaragana Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalata Shri Vishakanvitamscha. Hey Krishna, Kuruna Sandho, Dinabandhu, Jagatpate, Gopesha, Gopika Kanta, Radham Kanta, Namostate, Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Radhe, Brindavaneshwari, Vrishabhanu Sate Devi, Pranamami, Hari Priye, Vanchakalpadadubhyascha, Kripa Sandubhya Evacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavibhyo, Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, if we remember in the pastime of the lifting of Govardhan Hill, it began with, you know, it seemed like a normal day. In fact, it said that the storm was out of season. And so there was actually torrents of rain began to fall, and giant hailstones were slamming into the dust of Braj, right? And so the cows became very disturbed, and Prabhupada mentions in Krishna book, huge columns of rain were coming down. I mean, we've seen raindrops sometimes here in L.A. It can sort of like flash flood style rain. But imagine you step outside of your apartment or the ashram and you see columns of rain. You know, giant, it's like we have these columns in front of the temple, you know, big sheets of rain coming down. And not only that, there was thunder blasting and lightning flashing everywhere, slamming into, you can imagine, trees and rocks and hills and everything. So it's a very terrifying situation. And of course, Krishna, being the merciful Lord and protector of the residents of Vrindavan, he lifted Govardhan Hill just like a mushroom, and he protected against this terrifying power of Lord Indra. So where does this power come from? Well, as we hear in this particular purport, Indra and Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, they're controllers of the universe. Their powers are, of course, given by the Supreme Lord. In fact, we see that Vishnu, the maintainer, he's actually empowering Indra with the job of maintenance. And so, just like, for example, we've been in a drought for so long here in Southern California. If you just drive somewhere, you know, outside the city, it just looks nothing like, it looks like Mars or the moon or something, at least the pictures we see. And so, you know, it's just nothing but rocks and scrub and nothing there. But after these rains, like the El Nino rains, it actually looks, even though there's hardly any trees or anything, it's a desolate land, just from a few weeks of rain, it looks very beautiful. Right, there's all these trees, and it's just absolutely green. Hundreds of different shades of green and wild flowers bursting out of the ground. So where did this come from? It's just from a little bit of water. And if we see, historically, human beings have lived dependent upon the on nature, dependent upon rain for their sustenance in terms of like people living an agricultural life. And so when you live on the land, you really see how you're totally dependent upon the rain and on water. And so Indra's job is to actually maintain all living entities by giving this treasure of water, this life-sustaining principle of the universe, which we call water. And so not only that, but he also maintains the universe. He was given the Vajra, this lightning bolt, which is a very powerful weapon, perhaps the most powerful weapon. And he uses it to destroy the demons, to fight them back when they get out of control. And so both of these are given by the Supreme Lord. We see in that pastime, unfortunately, Indra, who's a very nice devotee otherwise, made the mistake of using them against Krishna, against the person who gave them to him for the purpose of maintaining the universe. So he was, of course, rectified. Forgiveness was shown to Indra. Also, Lord Shiva is known as a universal Pala. In fact, there you have a quote here from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's very interesting. I'd never really paid attention to this before. It says, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are called Chira Loka Pala, permanent governors. This means that they govern the affairs of the universe from the beginning of the creation to the end. In the next creation, the same living entities may not be present, but because Brahma and Shiva are existing from the beginning to the end, they are called Chira Loka Pala, permanent governors. Lokapala means predominating deities. There are eight predominating deities of the prominent heavenly planets there. And they are Indra, Agni, Yama, Varuna, Mriti, Vayu, Kubera, and Shiva. So it's very interesting, you know, you have these different, the universal government is always changing. Yeah? But Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, they're always on the GBC, right? They're always there. They're like the Supreme Court. And they don't change. And just as, you know, remember when Srila Prabhupada is here, the GBC, when they would run into difficulty, the first person they would go to is Srila Prabhupada, right? So in the same way, Lord Krishna has empowered these demigods as his representatives. And whenever they're in trouble, they occasionally go and visit him, you know, ask for him to intervene in a particularly difficult situation. So Lord Shiva is one of these Chira Loka Palas, meaning from the beginning of the creation to the end. He's the same. He doesn't change. He doesn't leave his body or anything like that. He's been here from the beginning, helping with the governance of the universe. We generally think of Lord Shiva as a yogi, a detached yogi wearing a tiger skin cloth, you know, sitting in the Himalayas. But he also has a function as a manager within the universe. And of course, his primary position is as a guna avatar. He's the destroyer of the universe. Now, it's very interesting because in this section, the idea here is that these entities, specifically like Indra and Shiva, they're responsible for, in a sense, holding back adharma within the universe. That's one of the major functions of these universal controllers, is they're supposed to protect you and me. They're supposed to protect this universe from the overabundance of adharma, or at least when it transgresses where it's allowed to be. And so the way Indra does that, as I mentioned, he has his thunderbolt. Lord Shiva, Prabhupada emphasizes here that he is the destroyer. So I kind of looked into this very carefully. It's very similar, at least from what I can see, to how Durga Devi is also seen as a universal controller. So I'm going to talk a little bit about her also. By the way, Shiva means auspiciousness. That's what his name means. Prabhupada also mentions elsewhere that he punishes the criminals of the universe. So as the destroyer, he has this tremendous power to not only end the entire universe, but he governs the power of destruction in general within the universe. All of us here, some of us are in younger bodies, Yeah, I look very happy and satisfied, and the world looks wonderful. Some of us are in older bodies, which are teetering on the brink, right? Which it's not a very pleasurable experience. So we're all at different degrees of experiencing this power of destruction. Everything that we strive for in life, unfortunately, is doomed to slip through our fingers. That's the nature of material existence. You don't get to keep anything. Everything is pulled away from you. Everything is ripped away from you, including your own body. Right? Generally, people are attached to certain things. You know, you get a scratch on your car, something, you lose your wallet or your keys, right? Or even, you know, there's different difficulties that may come upon you in life in terms of relationships. But nothing is really as close to the conditioned soul as his attachment for his physical body. The desperate attempt to survive. You see, when this is threatened, people become insane. They become mad. Clawing somehow. Imagine being trapped under ice, right? With clawing, somehow trying to scratch through it. That panic that you feel, that's the attachment to the body. That's the preservation of life, the idea that you are the body. That extreme fear, that extreme terror that we experience due to attachment to material nature, that's caused by the power of destruction within the universe. As jiva souls, it's not natural for us to be destroyed. It's very uncomfortable because we're eternal. But when we're subjected to this world, immediately we're immersed, we're submerged in an ocean of temporal destruction and fear. And so that power is Lord Shiva. And in fact, Prabhupada oftentimes mentions for the atheist, this is death. I'm sorry, death is God, right? This sense of overwhelming authority which no one can escape, that's the power of God. And that's Lord Shiva empowered as a guna avatar by Vishnu himself, by Krishna himself, to perform a particular function. So this is the power of God. You can imagine when we see these horrific, terrible things in nature, this is actually the power of God. We see when Srila Prabhupada tells the story of... this happened when I think the devotees were there in Mayapur, and there was a, sort of like a tornado or a hurricane of this very powerful natural force. You know, wind and rain was coming, and Prabhupada asked for the door to be opened. And then when the wind blew in, it blasted all the papers and everything all throughout the room. And Prabhupada is appreciating this is the power of Krishna. So these tremendous forces of nature, they are Krishna's forces. They are his power. In fact, they're just a tiny little amsha, one little fragment of his opulence. Yeah? And so Maya Devi, or Durga Devi, has a similar function. In fact, Prabhupada has a very interesting statement here. This is from the Srimad Bhagavatam. He says, describing Durga, Prabhupada says, there is a plan for material nature, personally known as Durga, to punish the demons. Although the asuras, the godless demons, struggle for existence, they are directly attacked by the goddess Durga, who is well equipped with 10 hands, with different types of weapons, to punish them. She's carried by her lion carrier, or the modes of passion and ignorance. Everyone struggles very hard to fight through the modes of passion and ignorance and conquer material nature. But at the end, everyone is vanquished by nature's laws. So, oftentimes in discussing this particular subject matter, Prabhupada usually refers to Durga, you know, Maya Devi, as the punisher of the living entities, the rebellious jivas. And that this material nature is a prison house, and she is sort of like the warden. And so, it's very interesting, if we study what Prabhupada says here, Prabhupada says you're personally known as Durga. In other words, sometimes he'll say that the demons are punished by material nature. He'll just say that. Sort of more of a perspective of like an impersonal force. But at other times he makes it very clear that it's a personal force, that she's, as it says here, personally known as Durga. In other words, you're being punished by a person. Not that we're demons, but this rebellious attitude of the living entity, which is particularly manifest in those who reject Dharma, that is being punished. It's being attacked, it's being brutalized, right? You're being humiliated by Durga, by a person. And so, as Prabhupada says here, she has these 10 weapons. You know, you think you can somehow overpower her by your intelligence. As Prabhupada says here, you're going to fight with the modes of passion and ignorance. You know, you're in passion and ignorance, not you personally, but we're in passion and ignorance, and we're going to somehow conquer material nature. We're going to make it work. This big project of enjoyment, we're somehow going to make it work for us. We're going to steer, manipulate, control. We're going to somehow bind material nature, make it do what we want. Yeah? Good luck. You only have 2 hands. Durga has 10 hands. Yeah? Whatever you have, she'll take away from you. Yeah? And not only that, but with the other 8 hands, she'll punish you. She's beating you and slapping you across the head, right? And she has all these different weapons that she tortures you with. And specifically, there's the 3 kleshas, right? There's adibhautika, adidaivaka, adiatmaka klesha. So you have these extreme situations of material nature, such as warfare and natural catastrophes, which are far beyond any power of any human being or combination of human beings in the form of a nation or anything to deal with. They're so overwhelming. Again, you would just have to stand back and see the incredible power of nature. And there's nothing you can do to stop it. That's adidaivaka. Then, of course, we're all familiar. I could see it right now. Adiatmaka klesh. Everyone's sitting, struggling, you know, somehow trying to sit cross-legged on the ground and shifting, and, you know, other people are trying to pry their eyes open during this boring class. Maybe that's adibhautika klesh. I'm actually causing that one, right? So there's also the misery caused by other living entities, right? You know, no matter what, in this material world, we're all struggling as materialists, not as devotees, but as materialists, we're all struggling to become God. We're all struggling to be the dominator and controller, so we're in competition with each other. It's like if you play football, it's very, you know, you can't expect to be peaceful on the football field. Someone else is going to be slammed. There's people running right at you as fast as they can, trying to actually injure you, right? So all the living entities are struggling in this intense competition for dominance and enjoyment. And even from the little insect that bites you to the insect called the amoeba or whatever that's biting you inside, or the cancer cell you don't know about, right? All these different living entities are somehow or other fighting and struggling to dominate material nature and enjoy, and pushing each other down in the process. And so you're going to suffer in the contact with other living entities. That's the nature of this world. There's nowhere that you can go where you won't experience these kleshas. You can try to build a small little shelter, a cave. I'm out of here, you know, get out of Los Angeles. I'm going to fly to a cave, right? I'm going to find a cave and then I'm going to seal it. I'm going to put a rock over it so no one can get to me, right? No, doesn't work that way. Those kleshas will follow you right into that cave, because this is Durga Devi's abode. It mentions in the Brahma Samhita, this is Durga Dham, right? You're in the realm of a goddess whose actually purpose is to punish your rebellious nature. So the only way that you can escape it, daivi hiyesha gunamai mama maya dadatyaya, maya evam, right, tarantite, you can cross over Krishna's uncrossable energy by His grace and His grace alone. By surrendering to Him, then He gives you His shelter. He can give us relief from this horrible material existence. Yeah? So, and you know, it may sound like I'm being a little bit cynical here, maybe. But the reality, this is actually reality. Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukha dosha anudarshanam, that you, with knowledge, one of the aspects of knowledge is to be fully conscious of this situation that we're in. And so the point being brought out here is that these universal controllers, they're meant to punish adharma. And they're going to Lord Vishnu in order to help them to sort of tackle this problem of these demons overwhelming the earth. We see that Vishnu, what is his role in all of this? Well, Vishnu is also a universal controller, in the sense that he is, of course, beyond material nature, but he takes the role of a guna avatar. He controls the mode of goodness. He is very much active in preserving dharma in material nature. It is dharma which actually creates the you might say, the principle of maintenance. For example, human society is maintained. It holds its position if the people in human society are practicing dharma. Otherwise, if the human society, like today, Srila Prabhupada is highly critical of modern society as adharmic or duskriti society, if people abandon dharma, society will disintegrate. It's like a candle. It'll just melt into nothing, which is what's happening. In fact, what does it melt into? It doesn't melt into nothing. It melts into animal life, right? Society without dharma quickly becomes animal society. Yeah? Hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. So we see that Vishnu, he maintains dharma in human society. Dharma samsthapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. He's constantly descending, either himself or through his empowered representatives, his sons and servants, in order to establish dharma in human society. As Sri Prabhu is quoting yesterday, and it's quoted today in Prabhupada's purport, this paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chaduskritam. He comes to protect the devotees and to annihilate the miscreants. Of course, this usually happens only in extreme circumstances, when the demons are super powerful, right? And the devotees are, you know, very wonderful devotees like Prahlad Maharaj, for example. Prabhupada often mentions that generally the material nature takes care of all that. And we could see that ourselves. We live in a society where people are essentially adharmic. And as Prabhupada mentioned in that quote, impassioned ignorance are somehow struggling to dominate and control material nature. But everybody is being frustrated. Everybody is being frustrated. If not frustrated directly, which, I mean, I've never seen an example of someone who's not personally frustrated in their attempt to dominate nature. But even if there was such an individual, at the time of death, everything is taken away. So Krishna is infusing dharma within human society in order to uplift human society. Actually, you, no matter what, you sort of live on a ladder or a slope. As soon as you take birth in material existence, within material existence, there's the principle of dharma. And you're either choosing, with your free will, to climb upward by following that process, upward through the mode of goodness into transcendence, right? Or you're choosing not to follow dharma and you're slipping downward. But you really don't exist in a kind of limbo. You're constantly choosing whether you want to follow dharma or adharma. And if you follow adharma, you're slipping downward away from Krishna into darkness. And the suffering can become extreme. And ultimately, at the bottom of that darkness, you'll find a planet called Yamaloka, right? Sort of at the bottom of the universe. Then you have Yamaraja's abode. In fact, in the third canto, there's an incredible description that, well, I'll just sort of like make it a little more visual. You can imagine if you're sitting in your hospital bed, about to leave your body, you may feel, as the room darkens, you may feel something brush against your hand, you know? And it's the unmistakable sounds inside of a dog. What is a dog doing in the hospital, right? And then there's another dog sort of running across that way, and they begin growling at you and looking at you. Perhaps their eyes are red and blazing. And then out of nowhere, out of the shadows, these creatures approach you with flaming eyes, angry, horrible faces, the Yamadutas, right? And then immediately, the portal of hell opens. You can imagine like a fiery ring opens up, and it actually mentions in the Bhagavatam, they grab you, they tie ropes around your neck, and they drag you through this hole. And the sides of the fire, the ring of fire, describes it's like a forest fire. You can imagine, right? I've seen videos online of my mother's house was destroyed some time ago by a forest fire. And I watched videos of the whole incident and what it looked like. It's incredible. It's like another world. It's like entering into a dream. So you can imagine these huge kind of forest fires on the other side of this tunnel of flame. And you're being dragged through on burning hot sand, and these dogs, the dogs of the Yamadutas, are biting and growling at you and harassing you, and they're just yanking you violently, right? Cussing at you and abusing you. And you know, the constables, they throw you before the judge, Yamaraj. And so this kind of existence is extremely terrifying and horrible. But this is what's at the bottom of the well of adharma, right? When you get dragged down into the deepest point. Sometimes people say, I was at my lowest point in that life, or, you know, I was really down, I did drugs, and I was really down in the darkness. So that's nothing. We've all been down there before. We've all been in hell. That's as dark as it gets, right? So this is from choosing the path of adharma. Yamaraj, of course, is one of those individuals who is empowered to establish dharma within the universe. He's also a representative of Krishna in that sense. And as devotees, we also have to be very careful of the principle of dharmasya glani, right? Dharma glani. That Krishna, why does he have to come and reestablish dharma? Well, Because of us, you know, there's the tendency within us, because we're conditioned, because we're attached to the material world, because we're egotistical. We like to twist Krishna's instructions. We like to twist Dharma. Instead of rising to what Krishna's given us through the spiritual master, we like to drag it down to our level. We like to change things. We like to twist things in order to accommodate our ego, our desire to enjoy, our desire to compete with Krishna. Rather than submit, we want to change the rules, right? And so this is how Dharmasya Glani happens. And Krishna, you know, eventually, even things as beautiful as this, as beautiful as Krishna consciousness, are lost because of this tendency. So we always have to be checking within ourselves to maintain Dharma within ourselves and our own actions, and to come up to the platform given by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, rather than degrade it. So I kind of want to just, we've got about maybe 5 more minutes, 10 more minutes. I want to spend a little bit of time to talk about how do devotees relate to this principle of punishment within the universe and the force of Dharma upon the living entity, or the requirement of Dharma. So it's very interesting because devotees are not under the same rules, right? We see with the pastime of Yamaraj, in the 6th canto with Ajamil, that the Yamadutas were actually punished because they tried to attack or they tried to punish a devotee, Ajamil. And it's very interesting because Yamaraj says there, he's such a powerful individual and such a pure devotee, but nevertheless he says that to the Yamadutas, that if you try to punish the Vaishnavas, not only will you be punished, but I'll be punished as well. Right? Like if I try to punish them, I'll also be punished. So the Vaishnavas are actually beyond his authority. Also, we see the example of Durvasa Muni. Remember Durvasa Muni, he tried to punish Ambarish Maharaj. And it didn't work out well for him. Because the devotees, especially those advanced devotees like Ambarish Maharaj, they're not under these same rules. They're not under the same requirements. Rather, what Krishna does, if you're trying to surrender unto him, if you're really trying to submit to him, then he knows that. And he takes personal control of your situation. You're not under the same rules. They apply differently to you. Just like, for example, if you have in a prison, if you have the regular prisoners, and then you have those who are, you know, in good behavior. And not only are they in good behavior, but they actually, like, assist the warden and stuff like that, you know. Like, you actually go around and you clean, you know, you volunteer. You're practically like a rectified citizen who just happens to live in prison. Right? And so in that condition, the warden kind of personally takes charge of you. None of the guards are supposed to mess with you and stuff like that. Does that make sense? You're like the personal servant of the warden. So Krishna takes personal charge. Now, the devotee does get some of his karma. There's the famous verse, Tatenu kambam susamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam hadidvagva purbir vididham namaste jivete yo mukti pade sadhayavak. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances within his heart, words and body, surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim, his dayabak. Just like when you have a, you're going to receive, when your parents leave your body, they give you their money, right? At least sometimes. So it's your rightful claim. It's written in the will. So similarly, if you are able to tolerate all the various disturbances and difficulties of material nature, then liberation becomes your rightful claim. You have a right to that. You know, there's in a sense that that's how strongly it's coming to you, right? By the laws of nature or by the laws of the Supreme Lord, that is coming to you. It's sort of like written in a contract. Consider this verse a contract, right? It's the will. And so Krishna Prabhupada oftentimes calls it a token punishment. Whatever karma that you may have coming to you, Krishna allows a small amount of it to come to you in order to assist you and rectify your consciousness. Otherwise, we'd be here forever. You know, imagine if Krishna was trying to preach to us, but we were never really shown the horrible face of material nature. Right? We would stay here as long as we can. We'd be happy to be here. You know, that's okay. You know, I'll just serve Krishna here. It's not so bad. Right? So therefore, there's this fire that's lit under us. there's this darshan given of the dukkha, of the miseries of material existence. And so we have to tolerate it and try to perform devotional service. Does that make sense? We have to do those two things. We have to be willing to fully look material nature in the eyes and see it for what it is. Break that incredible attachment, that strong root of material nature we have within us. Krishna compares it to a banyan tree that we have to cut with the weapon of knowledge. So Durga Devi, Maya Devi, under the auspices of Krishna, she's going to show you that tree. She's going to show it to you and develop within you the urge to cut it down. Yeah, because it's so painful to exist within it. And so that's one side of instruction. And then the other side, of course, Krishna is also preaching to us. On the much sweeter side, we have the lessons of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, who are urging us with transcendental knowledge, with the kindness and affection that they show, to inspire us to take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. We have these beautiful songs. We're just singing, Naikatma Prabhu is singing this beautiful song from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This beautiful vision of Krishna is meant to inspire us to take shelter of Krishna and enter into that more beautiful place and into that beautiful life of service where everything is Satchidananda, everything is full of eternity, knowledge and bless. So thank you very much. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, sir. Well, can I ask you to say something? Would you like to say something? Just a few moments. I'm not too familiar about Rasikananda and Jagannath Das Babaji, but perhaps if Archita Prabhu would like to say something. No? I'm sorry, I have failed you. I don't know much. I know that they're great Vaishnavas. there's a book, I think it's called The Stories of Rasikananda. I'm not sure, but I read it a long time ago, too long ago for my feeble brain to remember. But there's many beautiful, incredible pastimes. You know, he's surrounded by various miracles. But I'm sorry that I can't share them with you. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. All glories Prabhupada.
Thank you.